This is Best of All. Saluting tonight the birth date of the beloved actor and musician Lionel Barrymore, with Elizabeth Doubleday, Skitch Henderson in the orchestra, and the voices of Greta Garbo and Lionel Barrymore. National Broadcasting Company presents Best of All, a series of programs inspired each week by an outstanding composer or performer in the entertainment field. Tonight, we observe the birthday on April 28th of one of the most talented and lovable figures ever to appear in the entertainment world. Lionel Barrymore was an accomplished painter, an excellent director, and one of the great motion picture stars. But he wished to be remembered more than any other thing for his music. Therefore, to Lionel Barrymore, the musician, we fondly dedicate this Best of All broadcast. As a young man, he committed the cardinal sin in the Barrymore family of deserting the theater entirely and dashing off to Paris, where he studied painting for 3 years. But the pull of the theater was too strong, and so it was only during the rare times of unemployment in the theater that he could devote time to what became his real love, composing music. Let us listen to one of Lionel Barrymore's compositions, a waltz titled Fantasy of Love, which he dedicated to Fritz Kreisler and played now by Skitch Henderson and the orchestra.
Thank you.
Lionel Barrymore had a devoted and tremendous following among radio audiences. Christmas was never Christmas without his memorable reading of the role of Scrooge in Dickens' The Christmas Carol. And in his later years, he delighted his followers with the snorts and chuckles, the lip-smacking and gnarled tenderness they came to associate with his role as the lead in the radio series Mayor of the Town. The theme music for that program was written by Barrymore himself. And later, when lyrics were given the melody by Daley Paskman, it became this lovely song, So Waits My Heart. Elizabeth Doubleday is the soloist. Lionel Barrymore played roles in Camille twice in his life. The first time, young Lionel was all of 11 years old, and he played the part of Armand in a production directed by his sister Ethel. It had a short run, but the kids did come off 37 cents in the clear. The second time Lionel played in Camille will probably never be forgotten, for this was the talking picture which Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer produced in 1936, starring the immortal Greta Garbo. Even today, this motion picture classic, recently revived, is enjoying huge success. We're going to hear a scene from this great picture taken from the actual soundtrack of Camille. Here now are Lionel Barrymore and Greta Garbo in the well-known scene where Armand's father requests Camille to release Armand from the hold she seems to have over his son.
I'm sorry your son's tears, you.
Well, it's just as well. I didn't look forward to seeing him with any pleasure, under the circumstances. As a matter of fact, I'm glad to be able to talk to you directly and frankly. You see, I know what's been going on here.
Of course, you don't think me worthy of your son. You're right, I'm not.
No. No woman is worthy of a man's love who's willing to let him ruin himself for her, as you're doing.
I don't know what you've heard, but it isn't true.
Armand has told me himself that he wants to take his modest fortune out of my hands at once. The reason is obvious, isn't it? Can you deny he wants the money for you?
Whatever the reason, I hope you won't let him have it, monsieur.
I wish I could believe you are sincere.
A few years ago, I lived on bread and soup. I can manage very well without taking anything from Armand.
I still say what I came here to say.
This thing must end at once.
You might as well save your breath, monsieur.
How long have you known Armand, madame?
3 months and 12 days, monsieur.
3 months and 12 days. And how long do you expect this thing to last?
You've never known love to last, monsieur.
Never, when it was unsanctified by marriage, unblessed by children or social ties.
I shall love Armand always. And I believe he shall love me always, too.
Always?
Always.
Hasn't your own experience taught you the human heart can't be trusted?
I think I know my own heart better than you can, monsieur. And I can trust it not to change.
No woman, unprotected as you are, can afford to give the best years of her life to a man who, when he leaves her, will leave her with nothing, and who is certain to leave her in the end.
I don't suppose you can understand how any woman, unprotected as you say I am, can be lifted above self-interest by a sentiment so delicate and pure that she feels only humiliation when you speak of such things.
I realize now that you do love him, unselfishly. But even so, I say it can't go on.
But it will go on.
Armand is a young man with his way to make, with a career waiting for him. And in his case, he can't serve his best interests by being tied to a woman he can't present to his family or his friends.
Armand is no different than other men.
Oh, come, madame. Be honest. Haven't you found him different? Haven't you found him more sensitive, more loyal? Or am I prejudiced because I'm his father?
No. No, Armand is different.
And so, you see, as long as Armand loves you, he'll not enter rooms that you can't.
But a man can go back. He can always go back. Monsieur, suppose I told you I have the feeling I shan't live very long.
Well, then I'd scold you for being fanciful and a little foolish. What you probably feel is the melancholy of happiness, that mood that comes over all of us when we realize that even love can't remain at flood tide forever.
But all Armand, I'm doomed.
With him, you're both doomed. Without a profession of any sort, what can he do? Unless he sinks so low, he's willing to let some other man foot the bills for his life with you.
You don't know Armand. You wouldn't say that.
No one knows the man he might become if he loses his self-respect. But I think that's too high a price to pay even for love. I want Armand to enjoy life, not to be sacrificed to it. You see, my son is as dear to me as he possibly can be to you.
Greta Garbo and Lionel Barrymore in a scene from Camille. Lionel Barrymore loved children, and some of his gayest and most charming music is contained in the children's albums, which he also narrated. One of the albums he narrated and composed music for is Washington Irving's story of Rip Van Winkle. Rip Van Winkle, as you know, is the story of a kindly but rather aimless old fellow who so vexes his hot-tempered wife Gretchen that she sends Rip and his faithful dog Wolf out of the house. As is Rip's habit, he leaves Gretchen and their tiny daughter Judy behind, and with Wolf goes for a ramble high in the Catskill Mountains. It is here we find the two of them, Rip and Wolf, sitting at the foot of a big old pine tree and looking down the mountain and out across the broad expanse of the Hudson River. ¶¶
They were now at the summit, and Rip sat on a fallen log. He looked over the valley below him. "Look, Wolf," he said, "there's the village. The houses look like dolls' houses, so small. See, there's our house. Look, Dame Van Winkle must have put a log on the fire. The smoke comes out through the chimney. You'd like to be lying in front of that fire with your tummy tortured, whether you got kicked or not. Well, you're a fool. I'm glad I'm up here, wet or not. Here, Wolf, here's your half of the sandwich." Lordly Hudson was stretched out beneath him, the sun breaking through the clouds, making the ripples on his bosom look like gold. And the boats from the new village of Haverstraw, where they made the bricks, were sailing downstream. Wolf dropped his sandwich and began to growl. "Now what's the matter with you?" said Rip. The dog went over and peered down the other side of the valley. Rip followed him and saw a strange little figure carrying a keg on his shoulder. "Hey, mister, do you need any help?" But the little figure continued upward. At the top of the mountain, he dropped the keg. He looked at Rip, but spoke no word. Rip said, "But mister, can't I carry that for you wherever you're going?" Rip shouldered the keg. As the little bearded man pointed the direction, Rip could hear the thunder of an approaching storm. He called this fact to the attention of his new acquaintance, who merely shook his head and pointed, "Follow me." Roaring of the thunder persisted, and through it came the sound of strange voices singing.
"Big boat tonight, and set up in a big boat. Down go the ninth in, hear the thunder roll. Set up the ninth in, like that wooden soldier. Oh, oh, ha, 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 ha."
Rip and his companion, followed by the faithful dog, emerged in a little glen. There, to Rip's amazement, he saw a gathering of the crew of the Henry Hudson. They were playing at nine pins, and the rolling of the balls was the reason of the thunder. The advent of the keg froze them all like statues, and all were as silent as the grave. They merely looked at Rip, each with a glance more baleful than his neighbor. Rip's new acquaintance filled many skins with the brew from the keg and handed it about. The crew took it without removing their eyes from Rip. They quaffed down the skins at a gulp, and then set them down and started to sing.
"Big wooden nine pins set up in the big boat. Down go the nine pins, hear the thunder roar. Fine wooden nine pins standing in the alley. Down they go like thunder in the deep valley. 1, 2, and 3, ho, take a drink with me, ho. Good, 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 smoothly down it flows. 1, 2, and 3, ho, one drink with me, ho. Good, 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 down the hatch it goes. Set up the ninth pin like nine wooden soldiers. Roll down the big wall, see the soldiers fall. Nine wooden soldiers lying way down under. No more soldiers, no more knife, it's no more thunder."
They got big voices for such little fellows. Rip's companion handed him another skin, and Rip felt it to be simple politeness to quaff it at a gulp as the crew had done. "That's good schnapps. Give me another," he said. He disappeared. "And another. And another." As Rip held out his skin to be refilled, his head began to swim. "Oh, gentlemen," he said, "excuse me, I feel funny." He began to reel. He turned to the little man and said, "My hair, I feel so sleepy. The rest of his speech was inarticulate, and he fell forward. Rip, with his eyes closed, began to snore. Had slipped into the past. The fiery tide of war had swept over the land, and peace had come again. The world forgetting and the world forgot, Rip slept on the bosom of his beloved Catskills. The Hudson rolled on as usual, but what's this? The ground seemed stirring. An old bearded head fought its way through the leaves. It was Rip. He rubbed his eyes and began to groan. Oh! Where am I? I couldn't have slept out here all night. But I'm stiff. I remember now. The Henry Hudson, the crew of the Half Moon. I got rheumatics in my knees. I remember now. The strange little man with the keg, and the party of the nine pins, and that wicked schnapps. Where's my gun? What's this? Looks like my gun's got rheumatism, too. And Wolf! Wolf! Where are you? Wolf! Looks like my whistle's got rheumatics. Oh, that schnapps. Sleeping out all night's no good. What's this on my face? A beard? It's a foot long in one night. And white. Oh, that schnapps. I guess I better go. Well, when I get home, my wife, Gretchen, will give me a rub down, maybe. Maybe with a broomstick. As Rip approached the village, he met a number of people, but none of them knew him. And he knew none of them. Those soldiers over there, he said, they're not the king's men. They're all dressed in blue. I've never seen them before. Where did they all come from? And why are they staring at me? Red's mind was troubled. Finally, he found his way to his own house. It had gone to pieces. The roof had fallen in. The window shattered. He entered the house. It was empty and abandoned. Overcome with fear, he called out, Gretchen! Where are you? Gretchen! Judy, my little daughter! Judy! Where are you? Where are you? Sadly, he dragged himself to the village. He stopped in front of the inn. He looked at the signboard and called to the innkeeper. What have you done to King George? You put a cocked hat on his head and painted a blue coat for him.
Why, that's General Washington.
General Washington? Who's he?
Who's he? You don't know General Washington? Did you know there was a war?
A war? What war? Poor old Rip stood there like a lost soul. The villagers gathered around and looked at each other in amazement. Then a young woman pressed through the crowd. She had a little child in her arms.
Oh, hush, my little Rip. The old man won't hurt you.
The name of the child, the mother, and the tone of voice awakened a train of recollection in his mind, and he asked her, what's your name?
Judy Gardiner.
And your father's name?
Rip Van Winkle was his name. It's been 20 years since he went away. We haven't heard from him since.
Where's your mother?
Oh, she died a short time ago. She broke a blood vessel in a fit of temper.
Does nobody here know Rip Van Winkle?
Sure, that's Rip Van Winkle over there, leaning against the tree.
Rip looked and saw an exact image of himself the day he went up the mountain. Old Rip was completely confused. Then the young woman asked,
"Who are you?"
"Goodness knows, I'm not myself, I'm somebody else. I was myself last night, but I fell asleep on the mountain, and they changed my gun, and they took my dog, and they made an old man of me, and I can't tell who I am or where I am. Judith, don't you know me? Look at me. I'm your..."
Father! Father!
And so at last, Rip was very happy. And there was great rejoicing in the village. And when Judy asked him where he'd been, Rip said, "I met a goblin crew of jolly buccaneers. I sang their songs and drank their brew and had a darn good time for 20 years.
Rip Van Winkle in a setting by Daley Pastman, narrated by Lionel Barrymore, and music composed by Lionel Barrymore. Lionel Barrymore was an actor, and that's a splendid thing to be. But he also succeeded in that most difficult and terrifying art of being a human being. Even that gruff, growling voice of his couldn't hide the sentimental streak that lay underneath. He was a kind man, and underneath those poses, those cocked eyebrows, and those piercing, knowing eyes, was a genuine and wonderful human being. He was an actor, yes. But he said once to Daley Pastman, "Who wants to be an actor? There's nothing deader than a dead actor. My music can live forever." He was a wise and kind and humble man, and will always be grateful for what he gave us during his life, and for his music that we can still enjoy, just as he had wished. You have been listening to Best of All, which has paid tribute to the late Lionel Barrymore on the occasion of his approaching birthday on April the 28th. Featured on our broadcast tonight were Elizabeth Doubleday and Skitch Henderson in the orchestra. We wish to thank Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer for permission to use a portion of the recently revived motion picture Camille. Until next week at the same time, this is Kenneth Banghart with hearty congratulations to radio station WFOR in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, today celebrating its 30th year of broadcasting as Mississippi's oldest radio station. Portions of this program were transcribed. Join us again next week at this time for Best of All, an NBC radio production directed by George Voutsas.
This is the NBC Radio Network.